The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored, so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. And we start with the cover story headline on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal. Pandemic's hidden hurt. It may take years for many to get back on their feet to initially survive and then flourish economically, as the pandemic has dealt a severe fiscal blow across many industries and lives. And the cover story article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Why Restaurant Workers Are the Key to Survival, to Revival. The restaurant industry has come a long way since the start of the pandemic, but it still has a long way to go as its workforce reels from an intense year. And this was written by Erica Wells. The restaurant industry is experiencing a hiring need it has not seen since the start of the pandemic, but in yet another challenge for that battered part of the economy, finding people to fill jobs hasn't been easy. Some former food service workers, such as Durham resident Holly McCoy, are no longer clamoring for the positions. The 30-year-old single mother of three went back to school and has set her sights on being a community health worker. For McCoy, the new career path will allow for safe working conditions and for her to spend more time with her family while earning a living wage. If it were not for the pandemic, she would not have considered looking for work outside of fast food or retail. But after COVID hit, she spent the last year taking free courses at Durham Technical Community College and finding stable housing for her family. I've always wanted to go to school, but I had my first child at 18 years old, so I couldn't, McCoy says. So I decided to get certifications in something that will allow me to work whether there's a pandemic or not. I'll still be needed. I'll have a career. This is something that I've been waiting for my whole life. The pandemic has been bad, but now I feel empowered. More than a year after the coronavirus shook the U.S., the economy is slowly rebounding, and restaurants are moving toward recovery. Food and dining places reached $61.2 billion in sales in March, the highest in 2 years, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. The labor market is improving. In March, the United States added 916,000 jobs, according to a monthly Bureau of Labor Statistics report. The leisure and hospitality industry had the most gains, adding 280,000 positions, including 176,000 in the restaurant field, the most since the start of the pandemic. Still, employment in leisure and hospitality is down 18.5% since February 2020. In the Triangle, the food service industry had about 75,000 positions in March 2020, but dropped to about 42,700 by the end of April 2020. But by March 2021, the jobs number is increased to 63,600. But returning to pre-pandemic performance hinges on whether restaurants can entice workers to come back. And people like McCoy may be forcing the restaurant industry to re-examine its methods of hiring and retaining employees in the traditionally high-stress, low-paying jobs, a challenge that comes after a difficult year. Nearly everyone in the industry remembers March 17, 2020. That's when Governor Roy Cooper issued an executive order that suspended indoor service at bars and restaurants. Restaurants that could not pivot for takeout or outdoor service temporarily shut down, and some never reopened their doors. Overwhelming demand led to delays in processing the applications and paying out funds. That's when the North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association launched the NC Restaurant Workers Relief Fund to give $500 in assistance for qualified restaurant and hotel workers. The fund received over 15,000 applications and raised about $1.3 million, says NCRLA President and CEO Lynn Mingus. About 103,000 workers in the industry were displaced in North Carolina, with urban areas impacted the most, as professionals stopped commuting to their offices and spending lunch money, she says. Many businesses that resumed operations rehired and paid their staff with loans through the U.S. Small Business Administration's Paycheck Protection Program. The gradual easing of COVID restrictions and a decrease in pandemic-related deaths have prompted dining establishments to consider bringing on more help. We're feeling encouraged that restaurants can open with 75% capacity, Mingus said. That, coupled with the return of outdoor dining, warmer weather, and longer days, are giving businesses and consumers a sense of confidence. Restaurateurs are working feverishly to hire people to come back, but many have gone on to find employment in other fields. Moving forward, the hospitality and restaurant industries need help redeveloping their workforces with updated skill sets, including developing menus and pricing structures, as well as being more technology savvy, she says. Mingus says the restaurant workers who stayed feel positive about returning to work and getting vaccinated now that the worst part of the pandemic may be over. Still, many restaurant jobs remain unfilled as federal stimulus payments, income tax refunds, and unemployment checks are dispersed. Low wages, paired with the fear of contracting the coronavirus, have deterred workers from applying, even as long-term employment, at least 6 months without work, lingers. The minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. Tipped employees must get at least $2.13 an hour, as long as they earn enough to make up for the difference between the paid wage and minimum wage, according to state laws. In food services, the average hourly pay is about $12.45, according to the most recent Bureau of Labor Statistics report. In recent months, restaurant workers have weighed the benefits of working for minimum wage or low pay versus leaving the industry altogether. Others are using unemployment benefits and stimulus checks before making a move. Need for rental assistance. People in the service sectors who have been affected by COVID are among those who have sought help to pay bills. They have turned to programs created in response to the pandemic, including the Housing Opportunities and Prevention of Evictions program. The statewide program was launched October 15 to help low and moderate income renters with rent and utility costs. The NC Office of Recovery and Resiliency administers the program, which initially was funded with $117 million from the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act. The HOPE program is quickly reaching its funding limit after receiving about 43,000 eligible applications in 3 weeks, says Laura Hogshead, the CEO of NCORR. Delays resulted as people who never thought they would need the program found themselves applying, Hogshead says. The undertaking was larger than the agency anticipated, but it has tried to adapt, she explains. I'm incredibly proud of the program, Hogshead says. It was an unprecedented effort to stand up a program that never existed before last fall. NCORR has lots of experience spending federal money compliantly and quickly. When we volunteered for this, we thought it was going to be a sprint, but this has evidently become a marathon. We've had to make policy changes and adjustments to our staff and plans to make sure we can handle the next round of funding. NCORR initially planned to coordinate payments to landlords with 20 nonprofit partners throughout the state, but they were not set up to handle the volume, she says. Now NCORR oversees the transactions. Since we took back that function at the beginning of March, we have made tremendous progress in getting the payments out the door, Hogshead says. It's easier to do it through the state than through the nonprofits that have tight cash flow. We're just about done with payments for the first round of the program. To date, more than $133.4 million has gone toward over 56,000 rent and utilities awards for more than 36,000 eligible renters, according to NCORR. The HOPE program paid $132.7 million to landlords and utility companies across the state. A second application period for low-income renters who have gone through hardship because of the pandemic opened May 18. In the next phase, the agency will administer $546 million in federal pandemic relief funds. A portion of that will go to the state, and the other will be for the 12 entitlement communities, Hogshead says. Each community will operate their own rental assistance program. NCORR will run the state's portion, which will largely go to rural and suburban areas. A third round of funding is in the works, she says. Rent payments improve. Apartment property management companies are already seeing a difference as the funds are being paid to landlords, says Drucker & Falk Managing Director Kelly Falk, who oversees management of more than 30,000 apartments from Indiana to Florida and including North Carolina. Last year, the Virginia-based real estate company prepared for the worst before the rental assistance programs were launched. Falk says she says the company worked with tenants who lost work because of COVID by offering payment plans and waiving late fees. Raleigh was not as bad as places like Tampa and other tourist towns, Falk says, but we still had problems. For every apartment community here, there were 2 to 10 people who at some point lost their jobs and were not able to pay rent. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recently extended a rent moratorium through June 30 to provide additional protection outside the CARES Act. Evictions have been halted, but the tenants still owe the back rent. Nobody can afford to pay 6 or 7 months of rent, Falk says. I don't know that anyone really thought it through. We care for these people, but landlords have to have bills to pay. The good news is that when stimulus checks came out, many people paid their rent. On May 5, a federal judge threw out the decision, saying the public health agency acted outside of its power. At the time, U.S. District Judge Dabney Friedrich put her ruling on hold, but on May 14, she agreed to further delay it and leave the moratorium in place. Raleigh Area Regional Manager Brittany Partalatis of Drucker & Falk says tenants and property managers have benefited from recent changes that allow more residents to qualify for assistance through the HOPE program. House Wake, Resident Relief Foundation, and others. Partalatis says delinquency is about 2.6% compared to about 10 to 15% before funding went through. Looking forward. Restaurants are optimistic as more people are getting vaccinated and pent-up demand pushes consumers to spend. Also, the return of sporting events, concerts, and other large gatherings is on the horizon. But the industry still faces 2 big issues that were only highlighted by the pandemic: low wages and high turnover. Additionally, the pandemic may have emphasized the need for low-wage workers such as McCoy to reconsider their job prospects to set themselves up for success in the long run, resulting in a waning interest in open positions even as restaurants offer pay increases and signing bonuses. The lack of job recovery, paired with the accelerated use of technology, could pose major threats to those workers who decide to remain in the industry, according to a McKinsey & Company report. Going forward, the report states, more than half of displaced low-wage workers may need to shift to occupations in higher wage brackets and requiring different skills to remain employed. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the continuing series, The Promise Of. The headline, Confidently Plotting the Future of Esports, How Caleb Smith and His Father Are Expanding the Video Game Competitions Concept Throughout Cary and Beyond. Story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the project name is based on a historical reference relating to Union Army leader William Sherman's promise of giving 40 acres to slaves after the Civil War. That promise, which came to be known as 40 acres and a mule, never came through as President Andrew Johnson rescinded the order after taking office. One of the advantages of a virtual networking session is that you can't assume how old or young the person you're encountering actually is. That's how a seasoned journalist with a few decades of experience and a first-time Gen Z entrepreneur found themselves messaging and meeting to explore the rise of esports and its influence on the local economy and Triangle businesses. Caleb Smith, the 23-year-old owner and manager of Contender Esports in Cary, made a striking first impression during a networking event hosted by the Raleigh Chamber. He was one of several dozen participants who was actively engaged during the event, but he was the first to take the initiative to connect and assertively suggest a Zoom conversation to talk about his business and the topic of esports. In October, he and co-owner Vinny Smith, his father, who was also a video designer and programmer, opened their gaming center in Cary's Waverly Place. Contender Esports is a franchise organization based in Springfield, Missouri, with 4 sites open, including Texas and Louisiana. In addition to the headquarters spot in Missouri and the Smiths franchise unit in Cary, another 17 locations are on tap to open, including one in Charlotte, plus gaming centers in 6 other states and in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. We own the rights to a 10-mile radius around our center, Caleb explains, adding that the growth around the triangle, he expects they will likely expand to other communities surrounding Raleigh and Durham. His father was able to cover costs of opening the business, a $39,000 franchise fee, and roughly $320,000 for total build-out without outside financing. Caleb says within the first year, the business will likely transition from breaking even to turning a profit, particularly given that this is not your typical cookie-cutter franchise story. Less than 2 months in, Caleb knew it was time to reinvent the business. The corporate model was broken because the game center model relies on people coming in, he explains. Clearly, that wasn't happening during COVID. The method we were going with wasn't working, so we transitioned our center from being an entertainment place to an education focus. Caleb, who played pro soccer in Germany for 3 years between high school and entering the world of entrepreneurship, has a strong appreciation for the life skills and positive habits acquired through athletics. A lot of kids who come to our gaming center can't play traditional sports, but they still want to be part of a team, Caleb says. Instead of marketing Contender Esports and Carry as a place to play games, he's positioning it to parents as a place for their children to learn life skills, the same values, sportsmanship, and healthy wellness habits that can be acquired playing on any physical sports team. Contender Esports teaches its kids to take breaks and exercise, breathe and stretch, eat nutritious snacks, and drink plenty of water. Employees at Contender Esports are considered coaches. Kids can sign up to attend workshops or play on teams, and Caleb introduced seasons into the esports offering, 3-month seasons in spring and fall, plus summer camps, because he says it's a language parents can understand. But the language he espouses most is the growing viability of esports as an emerging market for revenue generation. It's becoming an avenue for kids to earn college scholarships. NC State University student newspaper, Technician, reported the university has won $68,000 in scholarship money since launching its esports program in 2018. And there are 175 colleges and universities in the National Association of Collegiate Esports. Professional esports has also become a profit generator for communities and businesses, as the Triangle experienced in 2019 when the Rainbow Six Siege competition was held at the Raleigh Convention Center. Following the 3-day sold-out esports tournament, the Esport Observer reported the Raleigh area saw $1.45 million in direct economic impact and more than 7,800 visitors attended. The live stream of the event attracted more than 16 million views. And the passion for watching esports is only intensified. In the first 3 quarters of 2020, Streamlabs reports more than 33 million hours of esports were watched. It's a growing industry that's garnered attention from the biggest businesses. Twitch TV, which was acquired by Amazon in 2014 for $970 million, is the dominant platform for live stream esports. In its 2020 report, Streamlabs noted 91% of all video gaming is streamed on Twitch, with competitors YouTube Gaming Live at 5.5% of hours streamed and Facebook at 3.4%, trailing far behind. At any given time of any given day, Streamlabs reported 2 million viewers could be found on Twitch. As Caleb pivots to integrate the foundations of live sports with virtual gaming, he's in good company. Last week, the National Basketball Association and Cary-based Epic Games made NBA-branded content, team jerseys, and accessories from all 30 teams available via the Fortnite game store for gamers to acquire for their characters. And furthering the esports fever, this agreement also includes plans for a Fortnite tournament, details to be announced. It's not the first time Epic Games partnered with a major sports league. A similar deal was struck in November to feature National Football League teams in the game. While he's busy managing the game center, Caleb also makes time to meet with schools, nonprofits, and businesses throughout the Triangle to further the understanding of what esports can produce for businesses and communities. My goal is to partner with companies like Epic Games, Red Hat, Lenovo, and Cisco to host esports tournaments in Raleigh, he says. What he'd really love to see is for the Triangle to become home to a professional esports team. And in a box titled A Closer Look, Contender Esports, location 316 Colonnades Way, Cary, the Waverly Place Shopping Center. Co-owners Caleb Smith, manager, son, Vinny Smith, investor, father, opened October 23rd, 2020, employees 8. Cost to open, $39,000 for franchise fee, $320,000 total for build-out. Monthly operating costs, $20,000. And we also have two news stories in the Promise Of section. Stand up for DEI or risk losing employees. 1 year after George Floyd's murder on May 25, 2020, 60% of Americans believe that racial injustice is a bigger problem than they thought it was before the events of the last 12 months. This is according to a survey conducted earlier this month by the Harris Poll on behalf of the DEI strategy firm Paradigm. The majority of people, 66%, want to see businesses take action on racial injustice, and 68% believe people should be able to discuss the topic of racial injustice at work. A large majority, 72%, say they want their employer to invest in creating and supporting an inclusive work environment. This feeling was expressed most by those in the 35 to 44-year-old group, where 84% of respondents felt employers should be investing in inclusion. Most notably, 63% of workers under the age of 45 would consider leaving their company if it didn't speak out against racial injustice, and 40% of people over 45 would do the same. NCHBCU creates new scholarship fund. The Lumbee Guarantee Bank, an independent community bank based in Pembroke, has pledged $25,000 to Fayetteville State University, FSU, for the establishment of a scholarship that will support students in the Broadwell College of Business and Economics. "We fund scholarships for high school students, and investing in FSU was a natural marriage and next step," said Kyle Chavis, CEO of Lumbee Guarantee Bank. "Education is the key to success, and we look forward to partnering with FSU more in the future." FSU is one of the more diverse schools in the UNC system, with an enrollment of 6,726 students, of which 80% are minorities and 70% are female. The vast majority, 94%, are in-state residents, and 50% are over the age of 24. Now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Managing Editor Dane Huffman. This home is talk of Wrightsville Beach. If you want to spend next Memorial Day at the beach living in style and have $13.9 million to spare, there may be a house in Wrightsville Beach for you. A Hawaiian-themed home located right next to the main causeway going into Wrightsville Beach is on the market for that price. And the swank home and big price tag is the talk of the island community. The home, built in 2019, features a host of amenities, including a steam room, pool, and sun-filled rooms with views of the water. The home is listed by Landmark Sotheby's International Realty. The asking price is double the area's most expensive sale ever in the market. On May 11, the property at 915 South Lumina Avenue in Wrightsville Beach sold for $6.4 million, breaking the mark of $6 million set just 2 months earlier, according to Just for Buyers Realty. The 8,622-square-foot home is on an interesting location, sitting adjacent to the Banks Channel Bridge that heads into the main island of Wrightsville Beach. The home is also on the deep water side of the channel, so it can handle a larger boat. And even better, it's a short walk to the trolley stop if you fancy a hot dog. The venerable turntable has become a hot item. The turntable, based on technology that's been around for a century, is making a comeback in the pandemic. The Recording Industry Association of America notes that in 2020, revenue from vinyl records was higher than CDs for the first time since 1986. In fact, vinyl sales grew 28.7% last year to $626 million, while CD sales declined 23%, to $483 million. And that means Americans are buying or updating their turntables in droves. Scott Newman, CEO of Raleigh-based Audio Advice, says his firm decided to focus on turntable sales when it launched its e-commerce platform in 2016, in part because vinyl sales were surging, and Audio Advice thought it could be a go-to source for information on turntables. "We have sold more than 1,000 turntables this year already, which makes us one of the largest sellers of turntables in the country, and obviously thousands last year," Newman says. HBCU rivalry to be held in Charlotte. One of the state's top football rivalries between historically black colleges and universities will move to a grand stage for the 2020 and 2027 seasons. NC Central University will play NCA&T State University at Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte in the first time the home of the Carolina Panthers has had an HBCU matchup. The A&T Central rivalry dates to 1924 and was played in Charlotte in 1990 and 2008. The latter game was played at Memorial Stadium before a crowd of 20,180 fans. With A&T's campus in Greensboro and Central in Durham, the Charlotte games are an easy drive for both schools' students. Exact dates and times will be determined. Ingrid Wicker McCree, athletic director at NCCU, U, noted the school has a solid alumni and fan base in the greater Charlotte area. Storage space explodes in Raleigh. Self-storage owners and developers in Raleigh have spent the last decade scrambling to keep up with demand as out-of-towners continue to pile into the region. Since 2010, Raleigh has added 3.3 million square feet of storage space, representing a 46% bump in inventory and outstripping the growth in Baltimore, St. Louis, and Detroit, according to a recent report by Rent Cafe. The market saw about 4% of growth a year. Despite all this, rental space is becoming more affordable. According to the report, a 10x10 storage unit in 2021 rented for an average of $86 per month, representing a 12% dip over the past 5 years. Rent Cafe says all this is fueled by strong population growth, with the region seeing a 21% jump in the last decade, in combination with a growing apartment market in which residents lack the storage space of many homeowners. New airline passes on RDU for now. A new low-cost airline has announced a slew of cities for its initial rollout, but Raleigh-Durham International Airport was a near miss. Utah-based Breeze Airways, a startup co-founded by JetBlue co-founder David Neeleman, has been quietly getting regulatory approvals for what its officials are calling a new kind of airline. RDU didn't make the cut, while a range of other destinations did, from Pittsburgh to Tulsa, Oklahoma to Charleston, South Carolina. Lucas Johnson, chief commercial officer for Breeze, says that while the Triangle is a fantastic growth story, the metrics didn't fit with the leisure trends Breeze is following right now. And finally, new toilet has multiple purposes. Get this, a smart toilet that can detect bowel conditions such as inflammatory bowel disease or irritable bowel syndrome. Well, the Duke University folks are on it. It's an artificial intelligence tool for a standard toilet to help analyze patients' stool and give gastroenterologists the information they need to provide treatment. The work is being done by Duke Center for Water, Sanitation, Hygiene, and Infectious Disease, also known as WashAid. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Aviation Eco Devo page, written by Lauren Onasorge. RDU faces major decisions, airport weighs investments despite tank and traffic. As Raleigh-Durham International Airport recovers from the tanking travel demand brought about by the pandemic, it has to balance its future needs with today's reality, a move that could mean gambling on major investments that, as of now, can't be justified by the numbers. During a recent strategy meeting, Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority CEO Mike Landguth laid out the challenge. If we were at 2019 levels, this would be a no-brainer, an easy decision, he said, of kickstarting major capital projects. Instead, the airport has to try to predict how quickly or slowly the travel industry will recover. In April, the airport said more than 600,000 passengers traveled through RDU, a big jump from the 535,000 in March, but still nearly 50% below 2019 figures. Landguth said his team couldn't nail down a reliable forecast for when exactly the airport would reach those 2019 levels, but he's betting on sooner rather than later. Now is the time to make the investment, he urged the board repeatedly. Plans for other projects, including CONRAC, the Consolidated Rental Car Facility, were put on hold indefinitely when the pandemic struck. A lot of these projects have long lead times, Landguth said, noting that in the case of CONRAC, that lead time is 5 to 7 years. Do we believe our economy is going to be fully recovered and exceeding 2019 in that time frame? Landguth pointed to the region's high growth demographics and making the case that they could be and that the airport should start planning now. These things could accelerate a lot faster than we anticipate, he said. We're really in uncharted waters in terms of trying to predict this. Bass Pro Shops Boat Builder picks NC. A national boat builder has picked North Carolina for a 500-job project over competing sites in Florida and South Carolina. Missouri-based White River Marine Group is investing $34 million in a boat building operation in coastal Craven County, a move that means 502 jobs over 3 years, and the plan includes acquiring New Bern-based Hatteras Yachts, adding the brand to its lineup. White River is an affiliate of Missouri-based Bass Pro Shops. Records provided by the NC Department of Commerce imply a tight economic development race as the firm was considering coastal sites in other states, including South Carolina and Florida. The company told North Carolina officials that these locations offer coastal sites to manufacture saltwater products similar to the site identified in North Carolina. Each of these sites are close to the company's customer base and offer an existing skilled workforce, the company told the state in a briefing document. A return to Raleigh streets. More e-scooters are available in downtown Raleigh, and this time things may be different for city sidewalks due to parking corrals. That's according to Lisette Garcia, director of government relations for e-scooter company Lime, which is bringing back 250 of its scooters to the city. San Francisco-based Lime previously deployed its scooters downtown in 2019 prior to the implementation of Raleigh's permitting process for scooters. At the time, complaints of scooters haphazardly parked on sidewalks around the city were common, but Garcia says scooter companies this time around have implemented measures meant to curb those complaints, including parking corrals where riders will be encouraged to park the vehicles. And we have a section with a big number, $2.3 billion. The price of the deal in which Raleigh rock crusher Martin Marietta has added 17 active quarries, two cement plants, and a sizable operation in California and Arizona. Martin Marietta announced May 24th that it had entered into a definitive agreement to acquire Lehigh Hanson's West Region business. The deal comes on the heels of an earnings call in early May where Martin Marietta CEO Ward Nye told analysts to expect a robust acquisition pipeline in 2021. And finally, a section called RDU by the Numbers. Rocky runway to recovery. Airport officials say demand is looking up. 221,000, the estimated number of travelers Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority CEO Mike Landguth told reporters would fly through RDU over the weekending with Memorial Day. But it's all relative, 58%. As of mid-May, RDU had returned to just 58% of its 2019 traffic levels, and 77.7%. The amount business travel has fallen from 2019 levels. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Caleb Harshberger. Home buyers feel the pinch. Housing demand grows as monthly payments pass 2019. Last year, as the Triangle saw home prices skyrocket, home buyers could take solace knowing that historically low interest rates meant smaller monthly mortgage payments despite the rise in prices. This year, all that has changed. Across the Triangle, mortgage payments have surged as rising home prices outstrip the savings brought on by the low interest rates, and demand remains as strong as ever. Today, rising home prices have pushed monthly mortgage payments in the Triangle to an average of $1,714. According to Triangle real estate appraiser Stacy Anfinson. That's well above $1,535 a month from last year and $1,617 a month from 2019. Meanwhile, month-to-month numbers show demand continues to grow even as prices rise and inventory struggles to keep up. It is interesting because no one has any idea when it's going to stop, Anfinson says. In April, average home prices ticked up 4% from the month before. Meanwhile, inventory last month was down 70% from the same time last year. The region's average price for new and resales was $389,400 in the first quarter. Among the hardest hit by the rising prices is entry-level home buyers with no existing home equity. They just can't compete, Anfinson says. Due diligence fees at $50,000 and $75,000, sales prices at $50,000, $75,000 and above list price. Meanwhile, buyers moving in from high-cost markets out of state may be among the best positioned to succeed in competition for a new home, with equity to draw from coming out of higher-priced markets on the West Coast or in the Northeast. Anfinson is among many experts who say high demand is expected to continue. Even as interest rates have begun ticking up, people continue moving to the Triangle in search of higher-paying jobs and a lower cost of living. These are lagging indicators. Wait until June. It's just going to be crazy, he says. And this is sustainable. And is this sustainable? Prices are what people can afford to pay. If interest rates have gone up each month and sales have gone up each month, people can afford it. Wake County commercial property sales surge. After months of sluggish commercial sales, Wake County saw a surge in activity in April. For the month, Wake County saw $2.02 billion in property sales after high-value commercial sales surged, according to data from the Wake County Register of Deeds. That's up from March's roughly $1.4 billion and more than double January's nearly $1 billion. Compare that to April 2020, when the figure was below $1 billion as investors tamped down activity in the early weeks of the pandemic. Of that $2.02 billion, high-value sales, defined as deals of $30 million and higher, made up over $500 million of it. Additionally, core market transactions, deals under $1 million, continue to rise as they have throughout the year. Grub Properties updates plans. Charlotte-based developer Grub Properties is looking to bring a pair of new apartment buildings to a longtime community inside the Beltline in Raleigh. Earlier this month, the company filed plans to add 196 apartments across two six-story buildings at its Sterling Glenwood apartment complex off Glenwood Avenue. The property was previously called the Beckana Apartments. The project is situated on 6.4 acres at 3939 Glenwood Avenue. Proposed Building A would sit on the southern side of the property, and Building B would turn the existing L-shaped complex into a slightly disjointed C-shape. Built in 1964, the existing apartments feature 264 units in an eight-story complex. The new apartments would bring the total unit count to 460. Long Island firm seeks major project in Chapel Hill. A New York-based developer is looking to make its entrance into the Triangle with a big mixed-use development in Chapel Hill. Earlier this month, the Beechwood organization out of Long Island began talks with the town of Chapel Hill for a project called South Creek. The development calls for hundreds of new units geared towards senior living and workforce housing, plus retail and plenty of open space. The project is situated on about 128 acres across from Southern Village off Highway 501 south of downtown Chapel Hill. The company recently launched its presence in North Carolina with an office in Charlotte. Beechwood brought on 35-year-old North Carolina real estate veteran Robert Cardos as regional president of the Carolinas. And finally, a big number, 173. The number of single-family detached homes a Los Angeles-based home builder is looking to bring to an area of Raleigh that's already densely packed with homes. KB Home filed plans for Tucker Place in May off Lewisburg Road and adjacent to the Highland Creek subdivision. Now we turn to On Retail and Restaurants, written by Erica Wells. They are banking on books. Barnes & Noble expands to Raleigh's Village District. A national bookstore chain plans to take up space in one of Raleigh's most popular retail districts. Barnes & Noble is set to open at the Village District, the former Cameron Village, in late summer, according to York Properties, the Raleigh agency that manages the shopping center. Barnes & Noble has more than 600 stores in the U.S., including six in the Triangle, but CEO James Daunt says the company continues to expand. The new bookstore will be in the former Pier 1 Imports 10,400-square-foot space. How do you feel about the future of retail? The rise of online shopping has taken a toll on retail as a whole, and the pandemic has exacerbated it. But good physical retailers make people enjoy being there. They give an experience that has all the serendipities of shopping in person. Those will do really well going forward. The advantages of being in a real bookstore are such that I don't think they have anything to worry about in terms of competing with online rivals. What has contributed to the company's sales growth this year amid recovery from the pandemic? We've completely changed in terms of giving the local stores the autonomy to create the right bookstore for their location. There will be things that are recognizable about each store that make it a Barnes & Noble. It's large with huge range. How the books are chosen is up to the skill of the local bookstore. It should reflect the local readers. I'm a believer in the personality of bookstores and the skill of the individual booksellers. What makes the Triangle an ideal place for a new Barnes & Noble location? The locality is a strong place for booksellers. You have other Barnes & Noble stores and great independents like Quail Ridge Books. Bookstores are community environments. You want to be in locations where people find it easy to get to, like in the Village District, where you have a nice array of other retailers and hospitality businesses. Can readers in the Triangle expect another new location soon? This will probably use up the people we have locally, so it will be a couple of years before we build up the new team for the next one. We'll be rolling out new stores around the country rather than concentrating them in a particular area, but we definitely are expanding. Exotic Cocktail Lounge opens. A tiki-themed bar is the latest addition to a vibrant section of downtown Raleigh. The Ark Royal opened this month in the Glenwood South District at 410 Glenwood Avenue, number 350, in the historic Creamery building near Tucker Street. The bar is part of Raleigh-based Hibernian Hospitality Group, which operates several other nearby venues, including the Hibernian Pubs, the Raleigh Beer Garden, and Watson Ward. Managing partner Will Workup teamed up with Hibernian owner Neal Hanley and filmmaker Patrick Shanahan to launch the Exotic Cocktail Lounge. Recipes range from traditional tiki mixes to more modern versions with citrus rums. Also, the establishment is brightly decorated with a tropic South Pacific motif. Co-workers rekindle downtown Raleigh consignment shop. Two former antique store employees could not let a 14,500-square-foot space in downtown Raleigh remain empty for long. Deborah Lineberry and Stacy Zan Fardino opened Two Girls Antique and Estate Decor at Seaboard Station on West Franklin Street in February, just 2 months after Hunt & Gather Fine Estate Furnishings closed. Since it opened, revenue at Two Girls has more than tripled as customers seek out items from the consignment shop for their home, office, and commercial space. Also, the company rents space by the square foot to about a dozen vendors. And in a section called He Said It, a quote from Seth Gross, owner of Pie Pan Incorporated, on reopening his restaurants after COVID restrictions were lifted. "We've been in limbo so long that it's taken a mental toll. We've pivoted and tried to find ways to stay alive. We so badly needed to get back to where we are just for our mental health. Last night was a big weight off our shoulders." And finally, a big number, $25 million. The total amount of Brookfield Properties plans to invest to help minority-owned businesses open stores at its mall locations across the Southeast through the Partner to Empower program. Brookfield owns the streets at South Point. And now we turn to the On Healthcare page, written by Sonia Warwick. Durham adds biotech jobs. China's CarsGen Therapeutics plans 200-job operation. A Chinese biotech company focused on treating cancers has picked the Triangle for a $157 million 200-job expansion. CarsGen Therapeutics, a Shanghai-based clinical stage company that has development operations in Houston, announced May 20 it selected Durham County over Maryland for an R&D and commercial manufacturing operation. The company expects to invest $157 million in the operation by 2025. For phase one of the project, CarsGen is expected to establish a 35,000-square-foot clinical laboratory for its R&D operations. For phase two, the company would establish a 100,000-square-foot facility for commercial manufacturing. The project is expected to create 200 new jobs between 2022 and 2026, with an average salary of about $76,061, bringing the total annual payroll impact for the region to $15.2 million, according to the North Carolina Department of Commerce. The average wage in Durham is currently $75,892. CarsGen specializes in chimeric antigen receptor T-cell therapies, or CAR-T, to mobilize a patient's T-cells to attack cancerous tumors. CarsGen will continuously develop and embed innovations to advance the revolutionary CAR-T cell therapy for unmet clinical needs, CarsGen CEO and Chairman Dr. Zhongguai Li said in a statement. The company has launched clinical studies of our leading CT053 and CT041 CAR-T cell therapies in the United States, Lee said. The new facilities will expand our global CGMP manufacturing capacity to produce the innovative CAR T-cell products for the U.S. patients. In March, CT-041 received an orphan drug designation for diseases so rare a company wouldn't turn a profit from the European Commission. The company is eligible for $2 million in state incentives, $1.6 million over 12 years through the Job Development Investment Grant, and $460,000 from the North Carolina Community College System. It could receive another $1.26 million in incentives from the city and county. Maryland was offering $5 million worth of incentives. Other finalists included Houston and New Jersey. It's estimated the project will grow the North Carolina economy by $1.04 billion and generate in excess of $31.1 million in state tax revenue during the 12-year term of the Job Development Investment Grant, according to Commerce. Study looks at how to diversify clinical trials. Drug makers have become increasingly aware of the importance of diversifying clinical trials over the past several years, and a new study details how that can be done. Drugs that were approved in 2020, like in prior years, had an overrepresentation of white people in clinical trials, 75% compared to 60.1% in the U.S. general population, while black people were underrepresented, 8% in the trials compared to 13.4% in the general population. A study entitled Discussions on Diversity, recently released by contract research organization Parexel, which is based in Massachusetts and has a second headquarters in Durham, found part of the problem is a lack of trust and, particularly for the black population, the fear of being used as guinea pigs. Overcoming that will require meeting patients where they are, such as at community centers, religious organizations, or local barbershops instead of through advertisements, reducing financial and practical barriers, such as through decentralized trials or reimbursements, could have a significant impact on the participation of minority groups in clinical trials, the study found. But going the route of decentralized trials should be coupled with increasing access to Wi-Fi and a good data plan, it continued. Durham biotech Humacyte names new CFO. The first company in the triangle to announce it was going public using the special purpose acquisition company route has appointed a new chief financial officer. Regenerative medicine company Humacyte announced May 19 that Doug Blankenship had stepped down from the role and would be succeeded by Dale Sanders, who will continue in his role as chief corporate development officer. Sanders has been on the Humacyte board since 2015. President and CEO Laura Nicholson says Sanders, who has served as CFO for five life sciences corporations during both private and public phases, is uniquely positioned to lead the company through the next phase of its growth. And in a section called He Said It, a quote from Parth Amin, co-founder and chief operating officer at EYES Incorporated, that's spelled E-Y-S-Z, a startup based in Oakland, California, and Cary, with its sights set on developing a software that can detect seizures in people with epilepsy based on eye movements. The only tool that doctors have today is the EEG with 20 electrodes and people wired up and stuff. That tool has been around for 90 years. There's been no real innovation when it comes to epilepsy management when it comes to tools. And finally, a big number, $4.6 billion. That's how much investment in life sciences projects the Triangle has attracted since January 2020, says Doug Edgerton, president and CEO of the North Carolina Biotechnology Center. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to A Better World, inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene. New effort helps newsrooms fund coverage critical to communities, written by Dane Huffman. News organizations that have been hit hard in recent years can get a lift from a new nonprofit with a national scope that is based in Raleigh. Orridge Quarles III, the former publisher of the News and Observer, is spearheading an effort to raise money that can be used to help news organizations fund journalists to cover critical issues in their communities. The Board of Journalism Funding Partners includes Jim Goodman of Capital Broadcasting Company, as well as people connected to a wide variety of national news organizations. All we're trying to do is help the news industry. We're not going to be the savior, Quarles says, but we think our model makes a lot of sense, and the fact that we have a national footprint really helps us. The idea stemmed from the challenge newsrooms faced with the Great Recession and the rise of digital media, led to slashing of jobs in journalism. The NNO, for example, had a newsroom that once swelled to around 250 full-time equivalents, but is only a fraction of that now. Small newspapers have also slashed staff, meaning county commissioner meetings, city council meetings, and other government bodies get minimal coverage, if at all. We want to support any newsroom that meets our criteria, Quarles says, noting that this could mean for-profit or non-profit organizations. The goal is to work with editors and newsroom leaders to identify what needs to be covered and how additional funding could help do that. That could be government news, education, the environment, or diversity and inclusion, for example. We know there are all types of stories not being covered, Quarles says. What we want to do is help with diversity, but also help you cover an important topic that is vital to your community. Quarles says the mission isn't simply to replace jobs that once existed. We don't want to hire a full-time reporter. That's not what we do, he says. We say to you, what's the need? And we provide you the funding to hopefully hire someone to do that, he adds. Journalism funding partners suffered a blow January 13 when development officer Tanya Taylor died suddenly at the age of 48. Quarles says Taylor had built connections to major businesses that were willing to help. After that, he turned to Sean Malone, who had just left his role as the president and CEO of the Dix Park Conservancy. Malone, now interim executive director at JFP, and Quarles are optimistic about the year and think journalism funding partners can raise $3 million to $5 million this year. Those funds can then be targeted to help raise awareness of an issue in a community through in-depth reporting. There's so many donors that simply don't know that this is in their toolbox, Malone says. They don't know this is something they can get done. Quarles has remained active in a number of efforts, including Dix Park, since retiring as publisher. He says he has a zest for this effort because he is really concerned about how American society will evolve without a steady flow of reliable information. For me, it's really simple, Quarles says. I think our democracy is in deep trouble without a free press. Beautiful Together Animal Sanctuary expanding in Chapel Hill. An effort to take care of abused and neglected animals is building a new home in Chapel Hill. The Beautiful Together Animal Rescue Center and Sanctuary is designed to be a safe haven and a place where animals can be adopted into forever homes. The center also will provide low-cost spay and neutering services. The center says the spring is when many shelters become overwhelmed, especially with kittens, and the center's goal is to expand and thus cut back on the number of animals who otherwise may face being euthanized. Tamara Lackey has been the executive director of the effort since co-founding it in 2014. Green Chair Project raises funds through designer auction. Nonprofits across the triangle have found creative ways to raise money during the pandemic, including Raleigh's Green Chair Project. Green Chair provides furniture and home furnishings for those in need at vastly discounted prices, and its model has been a major success. The Green Chair Project held an auction through May 24. Auctioned off were chairs that were redesigned by 14 local designers. The Green Chair Project started when Jackie Craig and Beth Smooth realized some people had more furniture and stuff than they needed, and those furnishings could help people emerging from homelessness. The Green Chair Project was founded in 2010 and has benefited from widespread community support. CQ, or SECU Foundation, makes major donation to Healing Transitions. The CQ Foundation has given a $500,000 capital grant to a local nonprofit seeking to raise campaign funds for the renovation and expansion of campus facilities in Raleigh. Healing Transitions, which provides peer-based treatment, shelter, and supportive services for individuals struggling with addiction, has been battling overcrowding issues along with concerns for privacy and safety at its facilities. Funding from CQ Foundation will help Healing Transitions increase capacity at the women's campus, doubling housing accommodations to 200 beds, and tripling the amount of education space with the new Career and Community Center. Healing Transitions opened a separate campus for women 5 years after opening a facility for men in 2001. Operating with an on-demand service model, Healing Transitions serves homeless, underserved, and uninsured individuals looking to gain freedom from addiction. Now we turn to general news in the Triangle Business Journal. How the Triangle Compares as U.S. Home Prices Spike. This is written by David Pertell. Home prices across the country continued to boom in March, up more than 13% from a year ago, as home buyers overwhelmed the available supply. The S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller National Home Price Index for March, released May 25, reported a 13.2% annual gain, up from 12% in February. The 10-city composite annual increase came in at 12.8%, up from 11.7% in the previous month. The 20-city composite showed a 13.3% year-over-year gain, up from 12% in February. March produced the index's highest annual growth rate since December 2005, and the Triangle, which isn't included among the composite cities, was right in line with the rest of the country, according to local data. The region saw average sale prices up 13% year-over-year in March, according to a monthly report from Triangle real estate appraiser Stacy Anfinson. Sales prices were up 5% from February, according to the report. Meanwhile, the U.S. National Index posted a 2% month-over-month gain. The Triangle's average price for new and resales was $389,400 in the first quarter, according to Anfinson. LabCorp CEO sees room for growth. LabCorp executives gave a virtual report to shareholders May 24 on a plan to review the company's business strategy. If you look at our performance, I think we've been executing very well, and we've been executing well across both businesses, LabCorp CEO Adam Schechter said during the UBS Global Healthcare Virtual Conference. We are going to continue to execute well in the marketplace as we go through the analysis. The Burlington Life Sciences Company reported a strong first quarter in fiscal year 2021, allowing for LabCorp to increase its full-year guidance. Even though we're doing well and our stock has performed well, we still believe we're significantly undervalued, Schechter said. As part of the review, LabCorp will analyze its capital allocation strategy also. In its increased guidance, LabCorp's total enterprise revenue grew to 2% from 2% to 6% from the initially projected range of -1% to 4.5%. The expectation on base business growth has also been adjusted to grow 13.5% to 16%, up from the previous guidance of 11% to 13.5%. And finally, the Business Pulse survey. Have you bought a home in the past year? 300 responses, 55% say no, 33% say yes, and 12% say not yet, but planning to. And we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.